This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hi, Danny.
Hey, Alex.
Have you ever heard of 3D printing?
Yeah, of course. There was so much hype about that a few years ago.
Yeah, right? Like, have you ever used a 3D printer? Like, do you have anything made from 3D printing?
I've never used one, but I do have, like, some boxes and stuff that were made with 3D printing.
And what do they look like?
They're plastic, and there's lots of ridges on it because they build everything in layers over and over and over again, kind of like a lasagna or something.
Right. So this idea of depositing a material in layers makes sense for like little things that we have at home, right? That hype around, you know, we're going to have one of these in every home hasn't really come to pass.
Right, right. No Star Trek replicators.
Not yet. But it turns out there is a really useful place for this kind of technique, which is in manufacturing. So the technical term is additive manufacturing.
Okay.
And some people are saying that additive manufacturing could actually transform the entire industry. Like it could lay the foundation for what they're calling the factory of the future. 3D printing works differently than other methods for making stuff. So unlike casting or molding, which happens when a material is placed inside or around something else, a 3D printer deposits layers of a material like plastic or metal on top of each other. Today, though hobbyists do still use 3D printers, machines like these have much wider applications. They're used to make parts for cars, medical implants like teeth, and even parts for commercial airplanes.
In our A350 aircraft, we have replaced a lot of conventional polymer parts with additive manufacturing simply because it's cheaper.
That's Håkka Schultz. He oversees additive manufacturing research and technology at Airbus. Airplanes are, of course, complicated and sophisticated pieces of technology, so the company can't 3D print everything. But you might have ridden in a plane that uses 3D printed parts.
We have also metal parts in our A350, specifically in the doors. And when I say metal, this means titanium, actually. So it's a high-strength metal. There's a very good use case, a mechanism that's opening and closing, basically, the doors. And this part, we could make it 30% lighter, so cheaper in manufacturing.
This technology has also become big money in the years since it became popular with hobbyists. The market for 3D printing materials was about $17 billion in 2022, and it's expected to grow to nearly $100 billion by 2032, according to market research firm Precedence Research. Its biggest impact on the future may not be those Star Trek-style replicators in our homes like we were promised. Instead, it may be changing how we make stuff. But the technology is still fairly new, and engineers are still figuring out how best to use 3D printing and for what.
From the Wall Street Journal, this is The Future of Everything. I'm Alex Osola.
And I'm Danny Lewis. Today, we're looking at how additive manufacturing could change the way we make everything from airplanes to cars to houses.
And how this technology could make them more quickly and for less. Stay with us.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
I recently paid a visit to Rutgers University in New Jersey, where I met with Rajiv Malhotra. Yeah, Malhotra studies new ways to manufacture things, including with 3D printing. And he's showing me this wild thing one of his graduate students has put together.
3D printer. This is a X-axis, Y-axis, and a Z-axis. And this is mounted on a Roomba, right?
A literal Roomba, but a mutant one. Picture a black disc with a bunch of exposed circuit boards on top of it, along with a spool of bright blue plastic fiber. That plastic feeds into the nozzle of a 3D printer attached to the back of the robot vacuum. So it leaves a trail behind it as it trundles around on top of a metal table. Not everything went according to plan, though. The Roomba started moving, but the printer wasn't working.
The printing process might not start because the Wi-Fi's down right now.
Evan Nastarovich is one of Malhotra's graduate students.
So that happens, but we can see that we're able to climb on top and we're able to maneuver without any issues.
A few minutes and one Ethernet cable later, the Roomba was ready to print.
So right now, the robot is finding out where it is. It is touching the base and it's going, where am I? Then it's going to start printing. So you can see it started pushing material out. It's printing.
As we watched, the Roomba drove on top of a square of bright blue plastic about 2 feet long on each side. It was about as thick as a couple of credit cards and was made from the same stuff coiled up on that spool attached to the robot's back. As the Roomba slowly moved onto the square, more of that plastic was laid down behind it on top of the sheet, kind of like a slime trail left by a snail.
First layer was printed while the Roomba was on the table, and the second layer was printed. It climbed up and it printed it out, right?
Malhotra says the reason for the Roomba is to make additive manufacturing more adaptable. He says a mobile printer that isn't constrained by a box could allow future printers to build larger and more complex objects.
If you want to make them bigger and bigger, making the machine bigger and bigger with it, eventually, if you want to make something the size of this room, you have to buy something bigger than this room. That's hundreds and thousands of dollars, right?
In fact, size was a limitation that Hauke Schultz, in charge of additive manufacturing at Airbus, said was something that could make this technology more useful for his company in the future.
The technology makes a lot of advancements. Machines are getting bigger and more productive, so additive manufacturing becomes more and more robust, it becomes more and more a standard technology, and it's more and more easy to implement it.
This is something that lots of companies are experimenting with in their industrial processes, minus the Roombas. Being able to use a bunch of 3D printers to make lots of small parts, whether they're prototypes, molds, or tools for factory workers to use. One of those companies is Ford, the maker of the Mustang and the F-150.
In our plants here in North America, we have probably over 70 3D printers to help make ergonomic aids for operators, to hold parts in a better way, to get higher quality, to use for spare parts for equipment. And they can do it very quickly, and they can iteratively prototype.
That's Adrian Price. He's the executive director for global manufacturing engineering at the Ford Motor Company. He says the automaker has been using 3D printing to design and produce cars for decades.
If you go back through the value chain, every Ford model that we make in North America, that car was either touched by a 3D printed part, or a 3D printed part was used to develop the prototype for it, or a 3D printed part was used to make a tool to help make it.
Price says 3D printing, or additive manufacturing, whatever you want to call it, is becoming a larger part of the factory line. But there are some challenges this technology still needs to overcome.
One of the things that we're working on, obviously, is how do we scale that and get it way more efficient at much higher production volumes? How do we get to 375,000 parts coming out of the process at a very cost-efficient way?
For the most part, Price says Ford uses standard 3D printers. For large projects, the company's engineers often make multiple parts and stick them together. Rutgers professor Rajiv Malhotra says the Roomba project is one way to solve the problems of speed, size, and efficiency.
The bigger idea here, hopefully in the next 5 to 6 years, is to be able to say we have an army of these, 3, 4, 5 of these, working together to build small, small little sections. Small, small little sections add up to bigger parts, right? And we have all of them working together. So that now you can build a part that is bigger than each individual robot or each individual additive manufacturing machine.
If multiple printers, mounted on Roombas or something like them, can work together on something larger than themselves, that could open the gates to larger and more intricate 3D printing projects, turning each robot into what Malhotra calls a tiny factory. And whether you're building a tool to make a car part or the part itself, Malhotra says additive manufacturing has the potential to be a lot more precise.
Lasagna is a good example of additive manufacturing, actually. You add beef, you add
cheese, you add tomato sauce and all of that, right? Pretty much same thing. In additive manufacturing, we can add different materials at different layers, at different locations. We can leave spaces out where we don't need them.
Instead of carving a solid block of metal to make a mold for a tool, for example, a 3D printer or a team of robots could just make the tool itself, saving time, materials, and money. On the flip side, relying on just one machine could mean big problems if something breaks.
One of the issues with additive manufacturing is there's a lot of chances for it to go wrong, right? You're adding material point by point. If you are adding 50,000 points, then a good gambler knows how many chances you have of screwing that up, right? A lot. Bigger parts, bigger problems.
And potentially losing time and money that 3D printing was supposed to save in the first place. To prevent a 3D printed object from falling apart like a poorly made lasagna, Malhotra showed me another project one of his graduate students is working on. A device that acts like a self-correcting inkjet printer.
You see that void here in that picture? Right there?
Yes, okay, so there's just that tiniest little gap between the two.
It was a really small error. But as we watched on a close-up camera screen, a gap a fraction of an inch appeared between two lines of plastic.
But that makes the mechanical properties of this part just garbage, right? Which we don't want. So now it's corrected itself.
As we spoke, the gap sealed up. The freshly printed plastic was once again being laid directly next to the previous line. This was just a demonstration, but Malhotra says even a small error could permanently weaken a 3D printed object.
If you're putting pieces of lasagna on top of each other, you need the cheese to stick to everything on the bottom, right? If you don't have it, then when you start to eat it, it's like a bad sandwich. It just falls apart.
That same inkjet printer has other abilities too. A rack that allows for up to 14 different nozzles to be used at once, unlike conventional 3D printers, which only have one. Malhotra showed me a few different objects his students had made with this device. Multicolored objects, made from a variety of plastic filaments.
Each of these colors correspond to a different extruder, to a different printer head. Red is one section, blue is one section, brown is... All of them are printed at the same time.
Just like a home printer has separate cartridges for different kinds of ink. Making a 3D printer that can mix different materials the same way an inkjet printer mixes different colors could be a step towards having a single printer that can make complex parts out of multiple materials all in one go.
The key is to be able to do it in enough scale for different applications with enough materials, with enough control. We need to be able to do this across the board. When Ford can make an additively manufactured engine en masse, then additive would realize its true potential.
For now, though, Price, the Ford engineer, said his company is mostly looking at the future of 3D printing and making small components and tools. Not entire engines, but engine parts.
There's a limited amount of materials that we can print at this point. So more materials with broader properties, because, you know, the reason why we use a lot of different materials in automotive in our production of our vehicles is because we need the specific property of that particular material based on what its function is, right? From an interior part that you sit on to a suspension component part that has to be very lightweight and but also very robust.
Plus, he says additive manufacturing just isn't fast enough for a company like Ford.
If you take an F-150, we're making one of those every 58 seconds, right? So that's a lot of volume. Traditional manufacturing methods work better for those kind of things. And so to me, this is more about, you know, picking the right tool for the job, right? Can't eat soup with a fork. And in the same way, we have to think about what are the right tools that get us the most efficient.
But some researchers are already trying their hand at some larger scale applications and making a factory of the future they think can solve these challenges. Alex has more on how that could work after the break.
Join the Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
In Orono, Maine, there's a house unlike any other I've ever seen. It's a fairly small one-bedroom, about 600 square feet, with a kitchen, living room, and bathroom. It's got a front porch and lots of natural light. All that is pretty normal, but there are details that give away its uniqueness, like its distinct curved walls and ceilings. And they're made of a woody material that I've never seen before. It's ridged and deposited in layers.
We've had high school students walk in. They come in, they scream. And they say, oh my God, I can live in this? I want one. How can I get one of these?
That's Habib Dagher, the director of the Advanced Structures and Composite Center at the University of Maine. What's extra special about this home, he says, is that it was 3D printed with wood fiber and bioresin, which are recyclable. Dagher eventually hopes to be able to print one of these houses in about 48 hours, though printing this one took a lot longer. Once the pieces are done, they can be shipped and quickly put together.
So basically, when you get to the house, it's a half a day of assembling the house or a day and you're done.
The immediate goal of structures like these is to address a housing shortage going on in the state. But that's not the only big thing being made at the Composite Center. They've produced a boat that actually floats, molds for blades for offshore windmills, even floor systems for high-rise buildings. Remember how we talked about large-scale additive manufacturing? This is where some of that is actually happening. To print big stuff, of course, you need a really big printer. The one at the University of Maine is the biggest in the world. I got to see it in action. Actually, I stood inside it. To give you a sense of just how big it is, the printer is designed to print objects as long as 100 feet, so about two school buses end to end, and as wide as 22 feet, which is a little more than the width of two school buses next to each other. It's a little hard to hear Dagher here because we were standing inside the printer.
This is what we call the positioning system. So that's just something that positions a tool somewhere. And the workhorse that does the job is the tool, and we call that an end effector.
The University of Maine Composite Center is already using this 3D printer to make things on behalf of clients, which include architecture firms and the U.S. government.
What you're inside of is not a 3D printer. It's a hybrid manufacturing cell that has multiple manufacturing processes because 3D printing is not the only way to build things. So by having multiple manufacturing processes collaborating together, including 3D printing, is the key to getting where we need to go.
The vision is what Dagher calls the factory of the future. Say you have a factory that makes parts for an airplane. Instead of having one machine that does just one thing, the vision for the factory of the future is that each machine can do multiple things. That's only possible with a lot of feedback and communication between various instruments working together.
So basically, it's a closed-loop manufacturing process where you're printing something, you're sensing at the same time, you're sending the information to the computer and an AI system, and comes back and say, well, wait a minute, we're going to fix this because there's a problem. And it automatically does that. And the more it prints, the more it learns, and the smarter it gets.
Dagher says the university has raised $81.5 million to construct this factory of the future and will be breaking ground later this year. And he says there's a lot they still don't know yet, like what kinds of materials they could use and what industries it could make a difference for.
We're the first to do it at such a large scale and try to really understand the opportunities as well as the challenges to try to use this technology and try to understand where it really fits in our future. Of course, not everything can be printed and not everything should be printed. But what can be printed, what should be printed, and how to print them are the challenges we're trying to solve.
For Airbus, Hauke Schultz, who we met earlier, says a change like that could be a big deal for its manufacturing process and its bottom line.
So it could mean that you don't have big depots anymore with spare parts, for example, but you just produce on demand, very flexible. And it's a big advantage of additive manufacturing to be resilient. Additive manufacturing is an industrial resilient technology, I would say, because it's very flexible. You can use the same machine for a lot of different parts. And so this is a big, big benefit.
Though Schultz says the company has plans to expand its use of 3D printing in the future, it's still figuring out when and how to best use it. That's especially true as the technology improves and the people designing the machines figure out how to do things like use new materials and reduce waste.
This additive manufacturing is actually still a complicated technology and an expensive technology. So we wouldn't use it for something that is very simple. If you can do by sheet metal bending a simple L bracket, you don't want to print that. But a part that is complex, it integrates a lot of different functions.
Could you see someday a plane made entirely of 3D printing, just 3D print a plane?
Someday, yes, of course, I can imagine it. In the near future, in the next 5 years, 10 years, probably not. Airplanes are still very complex and have a lot of technologies to manufacture them.
The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. Stephanie Ilgenfritz is the editorial director of The Future of Everything. This episode was produced by me, Alex Osola.
And me, Danny Lewis. Our fact checker is Aparna Nathan. Michael Laval and Jessica Fenton are our sound designers and wrote our theme music. Catherine Millsoff is our supervising producer.
Aisha El Muslim is our development producer. Scott Salloway and Chris Zinsley are the deputy editors. And Falana Patterson is the head of news audio for The Wall Street Journal.
Like the show? Tell your friends. And leave us a 5-star review on your favorite platform. Thanks for listening.